Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney Show. I tell you, we had an incredible week. Once again, the city of Benton Harbor is under martial law. We have our very own dictator here. I just want to read a little something from that was written. It says here, Benton Harbor is the new Selma. Leading the anti-takeover march, April 27, the Reverend Edward Pinkney decrying the emergency financial manager as a dictator, declaring the city of Benton Harbor is now under martial law. Save our city, he cried, inviting everyone to Benton Harbor Saturday, May 7th at 11 o'clock. We're going to meet at City Hall to protest Governor Snyder when he comes to town as the Grand Marshal of Blossom Town Parade. Hundreds of people gathered in Benton Harbor on Wednesday, April 27, to protest the emergency management law that has stripped power from the local government. Benton Harbor is the new Selma of the 21st century, a battleground for human rights and civil liberty. Mayor Wilson Cook told the crowd that gathered in town library before the march, the whole world is watching us to see what is going to happen here in the city of Benton Harbor. What happened here could affect the nation as a whole. Once again, we are under martial law. And we're going to listen to a little Martin Luther King, then we're going to bring on our guest, General Baker.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My Country, Tears of Thee." "Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. And I tell you, I am the first pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison. But we have someone on our show today that is so tremendous. I tell you, he's my brother. He's a man who I love dearly, and he's a true soldier. And I tell you, he's been fighting this battle for a long time, and he's someone that everybody should just take their hat off to him. I call him General Field Marshal. He's the man. General Baker, are you there? General Baker, are you there?
I'm here. I'm here, Reverend Pinckney.
You're there. All right. There you go.
And listen, Reverend Pinckney, Marion is on the other line.
All right. All right. We got two generals at one time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Right on. I want to tell you that I want to thank y'all for coming down too, because I tell you, we didn't get a chance to do the things that need to be done. There was some activity in the background that I didn't even know about, but it's always going to be some situation. But here's what I want to talk about.
Okay.
I want people to know. Tell us about the draft, and then I want you to go into details and tell us about drum. That's what we want to talk about a little bit today.
Well, okay. All right. Well, listen, first of all, my draft story, Reverend Pinckney, happened quite a while ago. That was 1965 when I was actually drafted into the U.S. Army during the Vietnam War period. And what happened was that I had been active in the local civil rights movement in the city here. We had a little student organization at Wayne State, and we did a lot of agitating, a lot of fighting. We marched with King in 1963 down the streets of Detroit, and I had been quite active. I had come home that summer after I had an opportunity to visit Cuba in the summer of 64, and when I came home, they sent me a letter telling me to come to the draft board to have a physical to see if I was fit for the Army. Well, at that point, Reverend Pinckney, I wrote a letter to the draft board explaining to them that I was physically fit, that I believed in fighting, but not in this war.
Yeah, okay.
And not in these wars of oppression where they went all over the globe attacking, you know, at that point in history, all my non-white brothers and sisters in the name of insidious notion of freedom back here at home. I went further in a letter to tell them that all people of principle are fighting people, and my fight is for freedom and Uhuru and Halongwe. And so when the call is made to free South Africa, when the call is made to free Latin America from American fruit, when the call is made to free Mississippi and South Carolina here at home, and when the call is made to free 12th Street right here in Detroit, you call for me, and I'll be the first one in line. So that was the nature of the letter that I sent to the draft board, Rep. Pinckney. Mm-hmm. And after that, they had nerve enough to call me up, send me another letter telling me I was dodging the draft.
Okay.
Well, I went down to the draft board and I told them, explained to them, I'm not dodging, I'm just not going.
Yeah.
After I did that, they went ahead and drafted me anyway, and my draft date was set for September 10th, 1965. So, Reverend Pinckney, now you got to understand, this is the middle of the Vietnam War. They are drafting people left and right. Black soldiers are dying in greater numbers than anybody else, being sent to the front lines in Vietnam. And under these conditions, we decided to change the nature of our little organization from Uhuru and transformed it into the September the 10th movement, which was the day of my draft induction.
Okay.
So we picked up a slogan of destroy the draft. We circulated petitions all over the city, at all the plants, the schools, you know, everywhere. We just littered the city with posters and plants on destroying the draft. And on the draft induction day, I went down to the induction office, and we come to find out some of this after the fact that they had called a special group of riot rangers up from Virginia. They had canceled all leaves at the Fort Wayne military installation where you get drafted in at Detroit. They were prepared, you know, to arrest everybody. We called for 50,000 angry people to show up at the draft induction center on that day.
Wow.
I went into the induction center that morning. I got past the physical, and I was anxious to do that because I didn't want them to claim I was lame. I wanted to make sure I was physically fit. And then when I got to the point where you swear in, I told them, I'm not going any further. What I want you to do now, you better call the police because I'm not joining this army. At that point, they took me in the back to Captain Cox's office and sat down and act like they wanted to interview me. And then they told me to go on home. They're going to send me home because they thought I was a security risk. So I left out and I went outside. And we had about 8 or 9 pickets that showed up. We set up a picket line at Fort Wayne headquarters and picketed for about a half hour and then went on back into the neighborhood.
Wow.
So that was my involvement with the draft at that time. That was before Muhammad Ali's protest.
That's what I want to hear. Before Muhammad Ali.
That was before that. And and we didn't wear no backward collar. I didn't claim that I was no preacher. I did believe in fighting, but I wanted to fight in just wars and not unjust wars like this was.
Absolutely.
So we split right down the middle, Reverend Pinckney, and that was my experience with the draft.
You know what? I tell you, I just love that. I just love to hear you talk about that. I get goosebumps all over me, man, because I know you're a true soldier.
I get goosebumps listening to your story.
I didn't go through all that you went through. Look, just between you and I, there's only one general.
Yeah, okay, all right.
Okay, we're going to keep that on our hat because if it leaks out, I might have a fight when I come to Detroit.
No, it's so not going to
be. So I
got to
be careful what I say on the radio show.
All right.
I know that someone is listening right now, but it's between you and I. Listen, talk a little bit about drum for us.
Okay, I sure will. And Mary, you want to chime in about drum? You can help me a little.
Anytime
bit.
You want to, General Number Two, you can join in.
Okay. The drum movement developed in Detroit, Reverend Pinckney, after in 1968, after the big Detroit Rebellion in 1967. And that Detroit Rebellion, essentially here in the city, actually changed people. People were different, had a different mindset and a different kind of commitment to struggle after the Detroit Rebellion. And part of the reason is because the police forces, and when I say that, I mean the National Guard, the state troopers, and the Detroit police, they shot this city up. I think reports indicated something like 200,000 rounds of ammunition was shot in this city during that 7 days of upheaval. They shot up everything. One little 4-year-old girl named Tanya Blinding was shot through the floor in an apartment over on 12th Street. But altogether, it was, you know, 40-some people killed. They arrested 7,000 people. They arrested so many people. They fill up all the jails and prisons in Michigan and end up with arrested about 500 people and held them at Belle Isle Park. We called it Belcatraz because what we thought was a park had become a prison under those kind of conditions. And
wow.
Reverend Pinckney, you know, with all those troops they had here and all that rebellion, they never declared martial law in Detroit.
Mm.
You know, not even under those conditions did they declare martial law.
Wow.
And I think it's important for what we talk about a little later. We still existed under civil authority. And I know that because I got arrested for violation of curfew and was sent to Ionia State Penitentiary, you know, for 15 days waiting for trial before I could come back down.
Wow.
And I went through a civil court, not a military court. So I wanted to make that kind of clear because I think it's really important as we look at the circumstances we're confronted with. But what happened, one of the main lessons we learned during that rebellion, Reverend Pinckney and the radio audience, was that after they established curfew here in the city, if you got sick, you couldn't go to the hospital. If you got hungry, you couldn't go get no food. But if you had a badge from Chrysler, Ford, or General Motors at that time, you could get through the police line, the Army line, the National Guard line, the State Trooper line, and take your butt to work. So we made a calculation based on that the only place that black people had any value in society in that day was at the point of production.
Mm.
So we turned all our efforts, Reverend Pinckney, coming out of that, towards organizing in those factories. We turned our work into agitating at the plant, developing caucuses at the plant, develop a weekly newsletter at the plant that could unite people around all the same kind of issues, you know. And that's the framework that led to DRUM. DRUM grew out of the frustrations at the Dodge Main plant of all the discrimination we were confronted with. Dodge Main had 10,000 employees. At that time, majority of them was black, but we had hardly no supervisor jobs, didn't have but one elected union official, couldn't get into skilled trades, couldn't drive high lows, couldn't get into inspection, couldn't get black women hired in the nurses' stations in the hospital so you'd have some people that know that you get sick. All those kind of discriminatory conditions existed inside that shop, and that's what we directed our work towards. Meanwhile, we were faced with all kind of speed up in plant. The cars, we were running about 60 an hour. They were pushing production up to about 65.
Mm.
People were running all night long trying to keep up with the line, and it led to a series of wildcat strikes. And those wildcat strikes ultimately ended up in us developing what was known as the Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement. We couldn't have developed that movement had it not been for young people that came forth and helped us. The students came and helped us distribute our little weekly newsletter at the plant that became the basis for organizing in that factory. And that's how DRUM grew up, and that's what DRUM became.
But the women were the ones that was doing the printing, the typing, putting the paper together. Once they put the stuff, their ideas down, we were the ones that were getting the papers together each week for each one of those plants. Not only did the Dodge Revolutionary Union Movement created an organizational apparatus for the DRUM workers, for the factory in Hamtramck, but it laid the foundation for all the other firms that were able to be organized throughout the metropolitan area, as well as medical workers. We were able to organize at different clinics, hospitals, and all, because people wanted to become a part of that movement, and we told them that they had to create an organizational apparatus within their own area work and join this motion, which led to eventually with the students being organized to the League of Revolutionary Black Workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
And so, in other words, what you're saying is that, you know, the women was basically, you were the backbone behind this.
We weren't just the backbone. We were in the front, too.
Well, we know that you was in the front. If I know you, Marion, I know for a fact that you want to be right in the front. And, you know, if there's some shooting, you want to make sure that you be somewhere close so you can fire. And my thing is that don't fire until you see the white of the eyes.
That's right.
So
okay.
You got to be close.
I tell you, it was when I look back at the tremendous organizing that went down, not only that in the factories and stuff, because I was constantly fighting, look, these workers have to go home. So we have to organize in the communities also. It began to affect the whole of the metropolitan area, and which was, we didn't realize at that time the power that we were wielding, you know, out here. But we know when we called a demonstration, people responded. We knew when folks wanted to organize, they came to us and became a linkage between us and them, you know. So it was, and the conditions were right. Because we had gone through the civil rights movement, we had gone through a lot of the stuff, you know, that exists. Statistics was hot, and the effects of this was getting everywhere. So people were enthused to get involved at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
I love it. I love it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, I kind of like know y'all history. You know, some of our listeners may not know y'all history, but I tell you. But you two, two soldiers, two warriors, two individuals who I love dearly. Love dearly. Absolutely. And in general, they gave you the spirit of the Martin Luther King Award this year. Is that correct?
They gave it to both of us.
Both of y'all. You and Marion.
You and Marion, right.
And both of y'all deserve it. And
yeah,
also,
okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you. Well, I know you deserve it because I know you too.
Okay.
But also, you know, you even share it with me.
Yes,
now,
we
you
did.
Know, I can't ask for no more than that. And I tell you, you know, you two have went far beyond the call of duty to take this thing to a whole different level. And
well,
I really truly appreciate you. And look, we have one of the largest listening audience
on
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, okay.
And people want to hear about this. So that's why I had to have the two individuals. This is not even a doubt in your mind that I love you two, and I know y'all love me. You know,
yeah, we sure do.
Look,
we sure do.
Before we do anything else, talk to me about organizing just a little bit.
Well, you know, listen, I want to say that what our experiences have become is while we get in the basis of fighting for the basic necessities of life, we have to analyze, you know, where do we start, and we get started. The main thing that I've learned about organizing is that you got to be persistent. You know, we have a lot of people, a lot of movements start a lot of times, and people rise up and they be trying to agitate and organize people. And people ain't moving quite fast enough for them, and then they started complaining about the people, you know. And then they'll get to the point where they get frustrated and quit and go on home. And then when the people rise up, ain't nobody there to lead them.
That's right.
Mm. So we have to develop a protracted kind of outlook. Our life story tells us that people will rebel.
Yes.
They will. A lot of people have in their minds that people ain't going to never do nothing. That is not true. Our history proves that people will rebel. It takes time. It takes education and struggle and leadership, and you have to be patient. People, it's just like dripping boiling water, right? Just a little bit of heat at a time, and that water will soon start to boil and turn to steam. Well, the same thing with human beings. And your agitation and propaganda that you do, they learn a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time. And then something will happen, and they'll learn a whole bunch real quick, you know, and they'll outrun you. If you don't learn how to stay in front of the movement, ahead of it, don't be tailing and complaining. The movement takes all kind of twists and turns, three steps forward, two steps back, sideways, crooked. You got to stay in here in this movement. Because at this point in history, still, ain't nobody free.
Yes, right.
And a matter of fact, it's not ain't nobody free, but different than the 60s when we was in advancing or moving forward with demands, now we live in a period where they're coming after us.
Yes.
Yeah, we ain't got nothing now, and they still coming after us. You know, they not going to allow you to stand still. You know, they are calling us out.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and we got to figure out a way to respond.
Every
time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to respond. Marion, you might want to kick in.
Well,
yeah.
For one thing, to have the patience
mm-hmm.
with
That's
the
right.
masses.
That's right.
And we have to understand that we've been living under this particular system all our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stuff that we're facing today is brand new. Who
mm-hmm.
would have, I know in Highland Park,
mm-hmm.
we would have never known that we were going to be living under a financial manager.
Mm-hmm.
And it was our persistence, staying in the trenches, going door to door. It was freezing sometimes to educate people around the question of water and what this and we learned what this financial manager was doing at the time. She was selling off all our assets. They were making sure that they were being paid righteously. I mean, part-time people, our financial manager was getting $150 million. The city manager was getting $250 million because she was not part-time. And the guy running the water department was getting $90,000 a year, working 2 days a week, and we were paying all their expenses, plus all the private contractors. We would have not known that if we had not done, you know, taking on the question around the water situation here in Highland Park, which made us go straight up against the financial management and the state. And once we learned that and began to take that information every week back out to the masses, constant meetings every week, constant demonstrating every week, constantly fighting against people's water being cut off, being up at city council, some of the same thing you do daily, every week, the people would have not learned about what was going on. It began to awaken the folks. We ended up having a program, Ask Welfare Rights, based on that because the radio station opened up their doors for us, and people began to join the movement. And we ended up being successful and helping to get this financial manager out of here because we made Lansing look bad. We made Highland Park look bad for all the monies that they were getting and squeezing out of us here. And it's got to be consistent. It can't be something that says, well, let me go take a vacation from this movement. When I get back, it'll be better. No.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stay and take it to its found course. And it's the
Absolutely.
Same thing with I was so proud of you last week
mm-hmm.
because I do look at at Benton Harbor as being the sisters or city of Highland Park. But they done took this financial manager thing to a higher level in the sense they have expanded, repealed the existing Local Government Physical Responsibility Act, which is Public Act 72, that it was governing Highland Park, to this present Local Government and School District and Accountability Act, because what you are facing, as well as other cities are facing up under this, and Highland Park is on the brink of going back too, because all these cities are facing financial situation, is the fact that they got the right to outright fire the elected officials, as well as get rid of collective bargaining contracts for over 5 years and what have you, and do what in the hell, like they did with ours. You know, they all had to do what the hell they wanted and answer to no one but the governor. You know, so we got to be just like you doing up there, consistent in educating people in the community. And that's what I like about what you're doing, the same thing we did. You've got to be able to constantly educate the people there. No one can come from outside and do it. You got to do it. And they don't like the idea, Reverend Pinckney, of you being in their face, you and others like Dorothy and Banco being in their face all the time. They don't like it, but I love it. I think it's one of the most consistent things that you can do, because not only are you developing other leaders, but you not only developing them in the sense that they have the ability to show them they got the ability to think and they got the ability to organize.
Yeah. Reverend Pinckney?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we were under that old financial manager for 6 years.
Wow.
From 2002 to almost 2008. And, the financial manager just, decimated our city. You know, they sold off our campgrounds in Port Huron, sold off the woodlands we had up in Oakland County. They gave the Highland Park Recreation Center to the rescue mission. They boarded up our library. You know, they closed down the police department and the city jail and moved the command center to a strip mall backed up by portable trailers. The financial manager imposed a 60% increase on our water bills, making our water bills the highest in the nation. And then if you didn't pay your water bill, they put it on your property taxes.
Wow.
They boarded up the entire city hall, and they put out a letter saying that they had a slot in the door so that you could come up to the slot in the door and put your water bills and tax payments through the door.
Tell them about the pension.
The pension system went broke for the city of Highland Park, and we were forced to go into an agreement to get 30-year bonds and increase the millage of all the homeowners. They told us that when the pension system goes broke, that the responsibility of paying that pension rests upon each homeowner in the city. And unless we proceed to reach an agreement, they'll send it to a judge, and the judge will impose a levy on each homeowner. You know, so we were faced with those kind of conditions on the Highland Park. And then Marion told you about how they tried to bring this private R.J. Wright company in here to try to privatize the city water, because Highland Park is one of the few cities in the whole southeast of Michigan that has its own independent water company. But those are kind of conditions that we lived under. Just last year, they closed down all the alley lights and took them down, so we don't have any lightings in the alley in the city of Highland Park any longer. You know, our library is still boarded up right there on Woodward Avenue. And those are kind of conditions that were imposed upon. And that was the old financial manager, Reverend Pinckney. This new guy got greater authority than the old one did. And they decimated us under the old one.
Wow.
You know, so it's just a horrible set of circumstances went through.
Real quickly, you know, they told the city council and the mayor in the beginning. They didn't bluntly come out and say, like, what happened in Benton Harbor. Mm-hmm. You have the right to open up the meeting, read the minutes, and adjourn. They told them from day one, you have no power.
Mm.
Anything related to financial decisions, the financial manager is the one that makes that decision. Well, that's everything. And she said, if you ever see it, you know, you got to show that movie up there.
The Waterfront.
Waterfront, yes.
Right in there, she says, what's her name, Jim?
Ramona Pearson.
She says in there that I am a dictator. And she's right.
Mm-hmm.
She's right.
Yeah,
but we showed her. We showed her once the masses began to move.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a dictator all you want, but that's a machinery that you can't deal with. We pick it up. We organize and pick it at a house on the weekend one time and leaflet the community to let them know that the water czar was running Highland Park. Everywhere she would go at times, we would show up. You know, we made sure that she had a nightmare coming on our butt. We went to Lansing.
And, you know, you sound just like me. That's how I want to do this financial matter. I want to go to his house and pick it. Continuously until he gets the man. See, I like to be in there.
You gotta let the community know who's living there.
That's right, and that's crucial. But listen, I gotta go to my Lynn Stewart moment, but I want y'all to hold on.
Okay.
Lynn Stewart husband, and I'm pretty sure y'all know who Lynn Stewart is.
Oh yeah.
Her husband Ralph is here, and you know, and we all love Lynn Stewart too. She have done some incredible work.
Has.
And
I
just want to thank her and her husband for the work they do. And he knows a little bit about organizing himself.
Okay.
After he give his update on Lynn Stewart, he's going to be asking, he want to ask y'all some questions, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
Ralph Pointer, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I would like to say to General Baker and Marion, you're not new to me. I came from Western Pennsylvania. You know what, steel and coal mines. And when you guys did your number, you know, like in 68, you were national. Every organization, every union group wanted to be you.
I got you.
Just marvelous history lesson that you've given people as to what you went. But I would like to go to a woman named Queen Mother Moore. And Queen Mother used to say to me, Ralph, you must control your institutions. Never mind all of that stuff. You do it. The end game is control. And this is how we got into the community control. Banks, schools, every trucking company that came in had to have black. Those who fixed the telephone lines had to be black. And she says, if you don't build institutions with teeth, they're going to take it all back.
You guys did it right.
Ralph, let's talk about Lynn a little bit. Then you can do your thing.
Lynn was someplace off in the distance. No, Lynn was an activist before she became a lawyer. She was very much aware of what Drum was doing. Very much aware of the things we had to do. We tried a newspaper, and the funny thing about the newspaper, and I don't know if there's any connection, is that we found out later through our Freedom of Information Act that the Michigan State Police was one of the organizations was monitoring us.
Maybe they had another drum out here.
Now, Lynn is in jail now due to her work for our community. And she's in Carswell Federal Medical Center.
That's right.
So one of the things that I tell people about, Lynn Stewart now, I don't want her to be the bird lady of Carswell, but this is what's coming, because she is a people person, and when she requested books on birds, so many people sent her books on birds that she put them in the books in the library. As quick as she would read them, she'd send them to the library, and I delight in her stories of how the inmates, the women inmates, get in debates as to what bird that was, what bird that is, what bird is coming over. And they wrote letters to the Audubon Society in Texas to get as an authority. And I'm saying, what a person involved, in her community. Yeah. And now she has a program trying to involve lawyers in the area to come support women who are in prison for no reason other than the lawyer didn't do a good job. Out on that and said, no, Ralph, you got to organize there. You got to get a group. So she's there, and she's also writing stories like an innocence project for these women that we can put on since we're from New York. We want to put these things on in New York so that the world can see the conditions these women are under. And she talks about, you know, when you go on visiting day, the children there, they're no threat to society. What are they doing there? They're filling up a space for somebody to make money in the prison industrial complex. And it never stops. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, wonderful. She says, Ralph, I'm in jail.
Listen, you make, sure you say that.
And she comments on everything that's going on, like Momia and the recent decision on Momia. Her interpretation is, no, they didn't give us a break, but this is the first time that we've had anything other than a negative from the courts on Momia. And she talks about the young lawyers from the NAACP Legal Defense, which has no relationship to the NAACP. They are a separate group, and they let you know that. They are down-and-out wonderful women who are doing that great work, and she has confidence that they have let these women put their foot in the door. They didn't open the door, but they got their toes in the front door. And they're going to use their toes for wiggle room. And then we cannot sit down and say that this is a victory. It is not. It's an opportunity for more fighting. And, you know, you guys, organization, you know, like, understand that. And we have Holder. You know, like, just ridiculous, this privatization. I can't talk about that. You guys have had it, you know, over these years. We must fight it. I'm going to try to be out there May 7th. But if anyone wants to write to Lynn Stewart, and if you don't have a computer, I'm going to say it once, and I'm going to say it slow.
Okay.
Write to Lynn. Lynn Stewart, Federal Medical Center, Carswell, Carswell. And the number is 53504-054, Unit 2N. And it's P.O. Box 27137, Fort Worth, Texas, 76127. And if you don't have that, look it up on a computer. Just Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, .org. And it's an interesting thing. People do send her books because she was an active lawyer for 40 years around the country. And because she gets so many books, one of the things she was laughing to me about the other day, she says, there's a book called When New York City Was Almost Lost, 1965.
Yeah.
Aruba Moore. Well, the book didn't come in. They wouldn't let it in. And the district director, the Southwestern District of Federal Prisons, wrote her a letter and says, we can't let that book in because it's pornographic. So Lynn says, would you please read that book again and see what pornography's in it? Because I don't remember it. So anyway, I got to call Aruba Moore to get a copy of the book. And I says, I'm sure you've read it. You understand it was about political control in New York.
Certainly.
How they got pornography out of that, I don't know.
I don't either.
I say to you guys, you have created a standard that we must reach again.
Okay.
We must organize people again.
Certainly.
Around the principles you did and how you organize young people.
Certainly.
To do that was just an amazing story. And Reverend Pinckney, this is the kind of program you must put on over and over again because people do not get it. They have to understand this history. And, you know, to this day, when I just hear the word drum, it rings, you know, like it makes me shiver. Because you can't imagine working in an industrial area, a coal mining town, coming from that, from, you know, all
that's
of my years. I went to my first union meeting, I was 5 years old. And my father was a union organizer.
And
you had to be able to run to go to a union
meeting.
People don't understand. You had to run because the police would come up and whoop you half to death and sometimes kill you. So they didn't have to answer to anybody. But one of the things another.
Hey, Ralph.
Yeah.
Ralph, this is Libby, and I wanted to read something about Ben Harbor.
Go ahead.
I want, if you're on an important thought, finish it. But I just want to say I'm here to read.
Well, the unions were always racist, and my father had a special statement at the end of every victory after we went on strike and fought. He would say, and now, how about a little something for our boys? Let's see, you knew who our boys were. Go ahead, Libby.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. A brief report from the University of Michigan Stadium, where commencement was held yesterday.
Okay.
And our new governor, Rick Snyder, who is being called the Ricktator, he gave the speech, and I cannot tell you how many protesters were there. They were from all over the place, and there were a great number of unions that were represented, and they had a warm-up at one of the high schools nearby, and then they marched over to the stadium, and they chanted loudly, and this is a very large group, I would say between 1,000 and 2,000 people, and they kind of surrounded part of the commencement ceremonies on the outside of the Michigan Stadium, the University of Michigan Stadium, which is new and it's huge. And nobody was really sure if the chanting could be heard on the inside. But in fact it was. Reports come in from people who were in attendance, some who walked out purposely, say that all the chanting could be heard on the inside very, very well. So that's a good thing. And people were notified, all the protesters were notified that next Saturday is another protest of the governor and the policies that he's trying to foist on this state and has been successful so far. One of them being the emergency financial manager has expanded powers under him. And the one that's been in Benton Harbor for a year, who our former governor sent, named Joe Harris. I have something to read from the bhbanco.org site. That's Benton Harbor, bhbanco.org. This is a comment. Yeah, this was posted at the Detroit News, a comment from someone named Libby Spencer. She says, "One question I have not seen asked or answered in the story of Benton Harbor is about the timing of emergency financial czar Joe Harris's move to dissolve the city government. The law was signed on March 16th, 2011, section, she's got the number, the name of the law here, of the emergency financial manager. Clearly, the law clearly states that an existing EFM has to wait 60 days to exercise their powers under Section 26.3. So how is it that Joe Harris of Benton Harbor dissolved the committees, meaning the city commission, the city council, the mayor, and all the elected officials? How is it that he dissolved this in 30 days when the law states clearly has to be 60? And then is he somehow doing an end run because he did not actually remove them from office, but merely prevented them from governing while allowing them to keep the title? And as an interesting aside, the city commissioners are only paid $90 a month, yet word has it they have not been paid their monthly stipend for attending meetings since February, which is before the law was even enacted.
Right.
It looks to me like Mr. Harris is using his power simply to punish his critics.
Now,
another thing I'd like to announce is that the protest that's this coming Saturday is going to be held in St. Joe and Benton Harbor. These are two towns across the river from each other in southwest Michigan. And the St. Joe event of the year, this is the biggest annual event, is Blossom Time. And they have a parade, and the parade is going to be next Saturday. It's called something like the Grand Floral Parade or something like that. Now, anyone wanting to come to this is to meet at 11 o'clock at the Benton Harbor Public Library, and this is 200 Wall Street. And the reason this is an extremely important protest is because they have chosen our new governor to be the Grand Marshal in this parade. And this is obviously, you know, the meshing of the corporate power of Berrien County, Michigan, which is Whirlpool, with the government, was represented by the new governor. And I received an email today from a Michigan activist named Richard Wunsch, who some of you may know. And this is what he has written. "What an insult" is the title. "Governor Snyder was able to finish the job begun years back and furthered by former Governor Granholm of destroying Benton Harbor. Now he celebrates at a parade in the town that houses the biggest beneficiaries of the destruction. This parade should prompt the largest demonstration against Snyder so far. What a great kickoff to the Recall Snyder campaign." And then he gives a link to that recall, which is firericksnyder.org.
I see.
And then you can get news about the emergency financial managers from progressmichigan.org. And so, again, that's meet next Saturday, 200 Wall Street, Benton Harbor. That's the public library. And then one other thing is there's a fabulous blog called Electablog. No, I'm sorry, that's wrong. It's Eclectablog, Eclectablog. .com, and that is all about news about Michigan. And on this you can find a video of Joe Harris, the dictator of Benton Harbor, who has taken away all voting rights and all elected officials. You can find a video of this man speaking at an emergency financial manager, like, conference, or, oh, it's a training session that was held at Michigan State University in February.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
And he's speaking, and he's basically it's very self-serving. He's talking up his own himself and his own position,
okay.
And he is denigrating unions and elected officials, and it's almost like you can hardly believe that
mm-hmm.
he is telling all these EFMs in training this information. So that's eclectablog.com. Eclectablog.com. And then I have one other thing, if there's time.
Okay.
Hey, everybody. Hi, Libby.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Daryl. Hi, Marion. Hi,
hey.
This is Dorothy.
Hey, Dorothy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just stepping
okay.
in for Reverend Pinckney for a few minutes. He has
okay.
to... got something else to do really fast.
Okay.
So, Libby, I didn't
okay.
mean to cut you off.
Okay.
I
okay.
give you another minute, Libby, and
okay.
then I'm going to bring in Mary.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Fine.
Let's see if I can do something in 1 minute here.
Okay.
Okay.
Me too.
Yeah, I do have something I can do in probably a minute.
Okay.
If you go to MichiganMessenger.com,
uh-huh.
They're doing some good reporting on Benton Harbor, unlike
uh-huh.
our major media.
Okay.
Here's something that says, Representative Fred Upton of the family that began Whirlpool is now in a position to eliminate the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yeah.
Okay, and this briefly, here's what it says. The property that was gifted in perpetuity to the citizens of Benton Harbor is very valuable as beachfront on Lake Michigan. The development of the golf course, water park, hotel, etc., will be built for people who can afford the $5,000 annual fee.
Mm-hmm.
Benton Harbor has suffered from extreme poverty for decades,
mm-hmm.
and I would also add to that, and also suffered what seems to be unspeakable, monumental injustice meted out by Berrien County law enforcement and the courts, most egregious and numerous illegal convictions and imprisonments of African-American innocents and juveniles in the state of Michigan. It's how Whirlpool has destroyed humans and families in order to
right.
steal land. But going on with this brief comment, and like other towns and cities, especially in urban areas, the lack of employment, the economic crisis in our state and across the nation, loss of tax revenues have exacerbated further ruination of the basic services necessary for a healthy community. Benton Harbor is important for two main reasons. One, the loss of self-governing by the elected officials being replaced by the emergency manager, and second, the property itself, and specifically the trade of a property that is owned by Whirlpool, which is a Fortune 500 corporation, celebrating its 100-year anniversary. The property exchanged was found to be contaminated and toxic. Removing the toxins will be expensive and prohibitive to a community that is financially crushed. An attorney has said that he's filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of citizens, stated that the concealment is breathtaking. Representative Fred Upton of the family that began Whirlpool is now in a position to eliminate the EPA. That's because he is the energy czar, or the, does anybody know his exact position? Head of the Energy Committee in the U.S. government. He's a representative to Congress from
okay.
Berrien County. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's it. That's all I've got.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Libby, for the update. Let me see. If I can bring Mary in. My husband trusted me with this. And let's see how I can do. Hold on a second. Mary?
Hello, Dorothy.
Hi, are you there?
I'm here, Dorothy. How are you? Thank you so
okay,
much.
Okay, doing good. Listen, Mary, you got 5 minutes.
Thank you so much for the 5 minutes, Dorothy. Thank you, Reverend Pinckney. This is Mary Neal. I'm calling you from Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, audience. I am the director and founder of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. Now, please look that up online, Assistance to the incarcerated, mentally ill. 1.25 million, that's over half of the people in prison, are mental patients who they turned out of hospitals right before they went into the private prison industry. When they started investing in prisons, they wanted to make sure they have plenty of warm bodies, and so they turned our relatives out into the street across the nation to become arrested for vagrancy and what have you. I didn't know about that being private prisons. I didn't know it was all a money-making ploy, so I developed an organization. Now, listen, my brother, Larry Neal, please look up online. That's the wrongful death of LarryNeal.com. Larry Neal. He was secretly arrested in Memphis Shelby County Jail, kept for 18 days under secret arrest, and murdered. The federal government, under the Bush administration, nor the Obama administration, will give us any records, will tell us how they killed him, why they killed him, and we are persecuted. We are stalked. We are censored. My computer, they tore up the last one 2 weeks ago. Also, please look online for Boycott for Justice. That's Boycott for Justice. I call for a boycott and ask all Americans who are fed up to stand up and a peaceful boycott. No shopping on the 9th of any month in 2011. And that is our non-violent answer, our 9/11 emergency for America. That's for workers. That's for people against war. That's for people who want jobs. That's for people who want racial equality. That's for everyone who has anything that they want to protest. Let's all protest together, because it all comes down to money. So let's all just protest, even without getting out in a march. Marching is great, but unless we have some financial consequence, it does not really touch them. Now, when I started telling them about this, Dorothy, I didn't know it, but they tore up my computer so I couldn't talk to the people online. They tore it up. My computer now has over 20 programs that start with HS. Now, I don't know whether the HS is for Homeland Security. I don't know whether the HS is for Hezekiah Sistra. He is the managing partner of the Cochran Firm office here in Atlanta. The Johnny Cochran Firm took our wrongful death case when my brother was murdered, and they proceeded to lie to us the entire statute of limitations and not really file suit. When we sued the Cochran Firm, because the Cochran Firm, you got to understand, it is Turn Cortel Pro. Johnny Cochran sold that firm 2 years before he died. He more or less sold it, but he stayed on top of it. That's probably why he's dead. Please look online for my article, Johnny Cochran's COINTELPRO Murder Theory. You know what they do to lawyers who are activist lawyers. You know Ian Stewart, who's in jail. You know Alton Maddox, who is disbarred. You know Johnny Cochran is dead. He sold the name of his firm. They fired all of his attorneys, and now that firm defrauds black people and people of color across the nation. I'm going to protest at the federal building tomorrow. I'm going to hold my sign. The city of Atlanta Police Department told me that if I tell people about the wrongful death of Larry Neal and about the Johnny Cochran firm fraud, they would taser me and arrest me. So tomorrow, people, I ask that you look out for me, because I will be in front of the Atlanta office of the federal building tomorrow with my sign that says wrongful death of Larry Neal. And on the back it says Johnny Cochran firm fraud. I'm trying to warn people across the nation that they no longer, it's not black against white. They have indoctrinated plenty of black Confederate soldiers to work against freedom. Please know that. And please look online for the wrongful death of Larry Neal. Look online for the Cochran firm fraud. About Jenny Cochran's death, please look at Jenny Cochran's COINTELPRO Murder Theory. My name is Mary Neal. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mary.
M-E-A-L.
Okay. Thank you. We got less than 90 seconds, and I just want to take this time to say thank you for the information that you have given to the listeners. General, thank you.
Okay.
We love you.
Love
Marian,
you too.
Thank you. We love you.
Okay.
Libby, thank you. We love you. Rath, Lynn, we love you. Mary, we love you. And
thank you.
We just want to say keep up the fight.
Okay.
Every
All
day
right.
is a struggle, but we got some warriors on this line.
All right.
So, and again, congratulations to General and Marion for the award that they were given for. You guys deserve it because you've been working hard and for a long time, and it's good for the nation to recognize you for your work.
Okay.
Libby,
thank you, Dorothy.
Thank you. You're welcome. Libby,
thank you
the update on what's going on in Barron County. Rap?
May Day was the day today to celebrate all of our work, and we did
all
it.
All right.
Keep on fighting those unions and recognizing May Day and which side the unions are on. Thank you.
Okay, and now we just ran out of time. Love you all.
Love you.